Ladies and germs, we've got somebody today. I'm excited to talk. We're old friends from a long time ago, 10 years now we've known each other. Joseph Faison the Fourth. Faison as in facing the wall. He's a musician, songwriter, cool guy, mixer, masterer, creative powerhouse, and currently residing in South Africa. Where at in South Africa? Cape Town? Is that right?
Cape Town, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We were just talking about all the differences in all these places. Apparently, it's cheaper than in America. So I got to ask you, you left America recently. Have things gone down the tubes all the way, or are they still on the way down the tubes?
In America?
Yeah.
They are rapidly sliding down. I don't know if they're all the way there yet, but it's only a matter of time, it seems to me.
Yeah.
I've been trying to get out for a long time.
When did you first think, I got to get the hell out of here?
When I was like a teenager, you know? Yeah, I've been wanting to get out for a long time. But that was more like, you know, oh, I want to move to Europe. It seems so much cooler. Yeah. You know? And then actually as in my 20s, like traveling and shit, I like spent time over there and I was like, this works better. Like shit is not as fucked up over here, you know?
Yeah.
And I tried to move to Berlin in like, I think 2010, something like that. And I put my shit in storage and I bought a one-way ticket. And I got over there and my mom got sick and I had to come back to the States. And then I was like, I started playing a bunch of like jazz gigs and shit. And I got into that. So I just stayed for a long time. And then me and my ex-wife and our daughter moved to Greece like during the pandemic.
Oh, really?
Like, fuck this shit. Yeah. Like, so we moved to Greece, and that didn't work out. And then I had to come back.
What was that? What was that like?
It was cool, man. Her mother, my daughter's grandmother, was living there. She retired and moved to this tiny village called Parga. That's like right below Albania across from Corfu. Like her dad was from there. And, her family, like, has lived in that village for a long, long time. And I liked it, man. I mean, it's Greece. It was like sunny and beautiful. And we were staying in a place underneath a castle and there were like olive fields everywhere and fucking horses wandering around. And it was really cool.
Was it something with the government or was it just something with you guys living there and the chemistry living there that didn't work out in Greece? Because it seems very nice.
Yeah, it was a little bit of both. I was supposed to, my ex-wife was getting her citizenship and they were supposed to apply for me. And they told me that they couldn't get the like visa extension thing for me. So I was going to have to leave for 90 days. And so I left for 90 days. And then like 2 weeks later, she was like, don't come back. I'm keeping the kid.
All right.
And so that was the end of my Grecian expedition.
It always, when you're a hobo, vagabond, traveling artist, whatever, it seems like misery just chases me around. I couldn't get away from it. Like, I would say, if I didn't have bad luck, I'd have no luck at all.
Yeah, right.
So, but earlier on in your life, you went to school in Tennessee, right? Or you had a full ride. You were going to University of Tennessee. Is that right?
I was going to MTSU, Middle Tennessee State University.
Okay. And what? And so at some point you quit. When did you hit the road? And what was that? What was the trivial the pinnacle moment where you were like, you know what? These people are going, I'm going with them.
Yeah, it was. So I was like in school for a semester. I didn't like it. And then a good friend of mine, who's still a good friend, he and his brother were in a band called Albania Mania that turned into the Petrovic Blasting Company.
Oh, yeah.
And now they're just the Blasting Company. So yeah, a lot of people like know of them through that. And they did a show called Over the Garden Wall that was a big hit that was cool. I was kind of playing music with them a little bit, you know, I was playing guitar and they made like, they got like a diesel, biodiesel bus And they were like in, I think they were just like fuck around in the South. Like I busked with them a little bit, and then they're like, we're just going to go out and drive around in this thing and busk. And I was like, cool, you know? And then they called me when they were in Savannah, and they were like, our guitar player just went to jail. Do you want to come down and play guitar with us for a little bit? And I was like, sure, you know? So I get down there, and I'm there for like 2 weeks. I'm trying to play guitar with them, but it's too quiet because they've got like foot drums and trombones and accordions. And I had like an Ovation that was like my dad's or some shit like that. So I went back to Nashville. I went to the club that I used to work at, and somebody had left a banjo there like a month before. And I just grabbed it and went back down there and then taught myself how to play banjo. And then I didn't live anywhere for more than a couple months for like 7 or 8 years.
And it's hard to remember it all. Yeah. I mean, you go from Tennessee. These guys were from New York, right?
No, they grew up with me in Nashville.
Oh, no shit. Okay. I always thought that these guys were from New York. I always think that people from New York are so much more cultured than me, but they were just awesome.
Yeah, they're awesome guys. They're just, it's the two brothers that are from Nashville. They spend a lot of time in New York. They're just like intelligent, well-read people. So maybe they come off as New Yorkers. They're all in LA now. But
I was just white trash who walked backwards into culture somehow. I was just like, all of a sudden I was like in places where they're like, this is Jack Kerouac Alley. I'm like, who's that? I don't know.
Yeah, I kind of feel similar way, you know. But
how does it match up, like Nashville scene versus New Orleans scene and Austin and San Francisco? What's the differences for you for all these places?
I growing up in Nashville, I fucking hated it. Like, I love country music, but I hated pop country. Like, I grew up with, my parents are both big country, like old 70s country, like songwriter country kind of people, like Townes Van Zandt and Steve Earle and all that kind of shit. I grew up with that, but I hated pop country. And then the only bands when I was in Nashville that like existed were like synth pop bands, and like there was just like nothing happening that was like interesting to me. So I couldn't wait to get out. And then I left, and then all of a sudden Nashville exploded, and there's like all kinds of cool shit going on there now. You know, in the past 10 years, it's like all kinds of cool shit that's been happening with like music scene stuff and like great like alternative country and fucking songwriting stuff. And it's like a cool town now. I was living there for the bulk of the past 2 years, and I like it, you know. New Orleans is like, I was there for like 10 years. And it's grimy and the music scene's fucking nuts. And like, I love that. But I'm getting to a point where like I'm old and I don't party anymore. And New Orleans is just like, I'm still down there all the time for some reason, but that's not where I want to live anymore.
Grimy. Yeah. That's a great, great word to describe it. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Dangerous, but it's not grimy like it used to be. It's not dangerous. Like when I first got there and was hanging out there, I mean, it was like fucking burned out buildings everywhere and everything was crazy cheap and like, like 4 billion punks.
So you come down about probably a little before me, I guess, because I met you and you had already kind of known your way around, I think, at that time when I met you. And we exchanged songs. I was like, you tell me your song about the, what was it? This Van Is Your Van.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I gave you some shitty song I had. It was not probably any good, but I was just so excited to be there. But still, the military police were still there. You had the anarchist bookstore was still going strong.
Yeah.
And stuff. Has it changed a lot since I've been gone?
Yeah, big time. It's like totally different. There's no like crazy fucking house parties and house shows and shit anymore. There's no, like all the weird punk scene shit just kind of disappeared or turned into something else, you know? I think a lot of the people that were all there all dispersed to, you know, either fucking like Philadelphia, or they bought fucking farms in Maine or whatever, or went to Weed World, or, you know, that weed kind of world. Shit.
I've heard that.
Nah.
I went to Weed World. I got sucked in there thinking, this is it. I'll retire here. I'll become a millionaire.
And right.
I was just cold and wet for like 6 years. It fucking sucked.
I've known a bunch of people that did really well, but none of those people are doing well now.
Interesting.
You know?
Right.
Well, because the bottom fell out of the whole fucking market. You know what I mean?
Yep.
When they did the legalization shit, the big guys came in and, you know, I'm sure there's still people there doing things on smaller scale, but all the people I know, minus one or two people, got just like wiped out.
In our time, weed went from $5,000 a pound to like $300. And that's it. Now it's over. But this sustained an entire army of artists that were going there and then, you know, trekking back to New Orleans in the winter.
It's a hell of a lot better than Beats in Minnesota in the middle of the winter.
I never did that, but this is super, so popular that it was even in that Nomad movie with the Hollywood movie with Frances McDormand, where she's a hobo that, you know, shits in a bucket in her van.
Oh, yeah. And she's like, I saw that. That was a good movie.
She's like, I'm doing beet harvest. I was like,
yeah, I remember that. It was like, yeah, beet harvest.
And I was like, this is the first movie I've seen that's authentic.
Yeah, right. I never did that. I almost did 1 year. And I'm kind of glad I did, because it's like, I could have made the same amount of money just fucking playing music in New Orleans pretty much, just over a longer period of time, and not being fucking freezing cold and like having people OD around me and getting fights every weekend and shit.
Yeah. If I had a nickel for every time somebody turned fucking blue on me, come out of the bathroom like, go check on Josh. I haven't seen him for a while. Then go in there. Many times. Girls and guys.
It's a thing.
This lifestyle is pretty crazy. I romanticize the whole journey and everything, but it's sort of interesting how it's these delinquent runaway children get together and start like a fucking underground movement where they're meeting each other in all these different geographic locations and riding the same trains and all this stuff. It's like none of that's publicized. Well, you wouldn't know about it until you stoop that low, right? And you were like, fuck it.
I didn't fucking know about it, man. I didn't know about it. Like I was when I was talking about earlier, I went on that Veggie Bus tour thing, and like the rest of the band went to do something else. And I was like, well, like I'm not going back, you know, but I didn't know what to fucking do. I was like, I had a car. It was like this fucked up old Camry. And I was just like driving around. It took me about 6 months of just like fucking around by myself. And then suddenly started meeting people that were like, wait, you can get around for free? Like you could just fucking get on trains? Like you guys listen to like old fucking Appalachian music? You know, like I had no fucking clue. Like the punk scene in Nashville was like, none of that existed there. You know, there's like lots of cities where that shit did exist, but it was not present in Nashville. I had no fucking clue until I actually started doing it, you know?
So,
and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, there's hundreds of us everywhere, you know?
Yeah. I know. I can remember just seeing the same people in different places around the country. And then, I don't know, there was something about that struck me as magical. Like I thought, well, here we are, that we must be doing something right. Because obviously, how is this possible that you'd meet these people? But
It was fucking, it was cool. It was a wild ride, you know?
Now we're old. Now we got to think about the future, you know? Now my knees hurt.
Yeah, right. Fucking, you know, it's like so many of those people are dead, you know? A lot of those people are just doing fucking bad, you know? But, you know, some of them aren't.
Some of them like got rich off the backs of all their friends. Others went on to hang themselves. Other people died with a needle in their arms in the fucking desert. And then some of us I'm the guy who go to the cabin in the woods and now I like yell at children from my balcony and like eat onions. I'm just like an evil old man.
I guess it's a good thing you're in Germany then, right?
Yeah, that's yeah. Like, I fit in.
That's yeah. a stereotype there. Yeah. The no. old angry man eating onions on his balcony.
Yeah.
Yelling at the kinders.
Yeah. Was ist los mit dir?
Huh. How's your German?
This is okay. I get by okay.
Yeah.
Ich spreche Deutsch gut genug für Gassi gehen mit meinem Hund. So I when I go walk my dog, I can talk with the people good enough to where they don't give me too much trouble. But, you know, I have to go do stuff like the doctor and stuff like this. And I just went to court because I was growing weed out here and it's not legal. And so I almost went to jail for like 2 years.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So I'm on probation for 2 years. I got to kind of keep my nose clean. So that's why I'm doing the podcast and trying to stay out of trouble.
Yeah.
But no, for the most part, it's all right. You know, I stay above the poverty line somehow. But, you know, like South Africa, like you're saying, it's cheaper. It's cheaper. The food's cheaper. The rent's cheaper.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's dirt cheap. Like the only reason why it hasn't been inundated by people is because it is so far from everything.
Really?
Like it's an 18-hour flight from Atlanta. It's like 8 hours or something to Europe. You know what I mean? Like the closest big city outside of South Africa is like Lagos in Nigeria.
Wow,
you know?
That's middle Africa, yeah.
Yeah, then you go up and then you've got like Cairo, you know?
Wow. That's
yeah, so it's in Nairobi, I guess, in Kenya too. But
you're like at the edge of the earth almost.
I'm at the bottom of the bottom. Like I live on the bottom part of Cape Town, like on the peninsula, like where I've got the Indian Ocean and the Atlantic on both sides of me, and I'm like maybe 15 miles from the bottom, you know, the Cape of Good Hope.
You got Magellan. That's his thing. He looped around, I think. One of those dudes.
Yeah.
One of those boat
guys.
I think
it was Magellan. Yeah, I think it was Magellan. There's actually right by, like in my neighborhood, the beach that's on my neighborhood has a shipwreck on it from, it's like an old steamer, coal steamer thing from the 1800s where the pilot thought that he was rounding the Cape, but it was just like a rocky outcrop and they went aground and, destroyed the ship. They couldn't get it out dude killed himself. And now there's just this like fucking metal skeleton of a ship from the 1800s beach over here. It's pretty wild.
Sounds like a song. It's like the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Gonna write it.
Yeah, it's called like the Kokopa or some shit like that. It's like they're carrying like coal or something. I don't know what the fuck they're doing.
You get into history?
Some cool.
The older you get, do you get into history and shit?
I've always been really, really into history.
Yeah.
I'm a huge, huge history nerd.
Yeah. Me too. The older I get, the more I just want to learn. Science and history, both, yeah.
Yeah. Science, not so much. Doesn't interest me as much. But, like, history and then, I guess, maybe the soft sciences, like anthropology.
Oh, no, that's my shit. Well, biology, zoology. Not, like, going in there and torturing mice, vacuuming out their brains or whatever. There's some sick fuckers out there. That's not my thing, but.
Yeah. More, you know.
Jane Goodall types. That's all right.
Yeah. No, that shit is interesting to me. That stuff is interesting. Like animals, social behavior stuff is really interesting, but I'm like not that interested in the Latin names for different kinds of butterflies. Like I would not have made it in Victorian England. You know what I mean? Like all those motherfuckers were like a gentleman and the world's foremost butterfly collector or whatever. Like, you had to be like a scientist or like a lay scientist. But yeah, I'm like a big I got kind of obsessed with Greek history when I was a teenager, so like big into the Mediterranean world, I guess, and Mesopotamian history. And I've been delving more now that I'm here into African history, which is fucking wild and totally different than what we learned in school, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you don't hear anything about Africa. Like, I mean, maybe a little bit about post-colonial stuff, but it's, like, really, you know. I mean, there's And there's so much shit that happened, and big fucking civilizations and cultural movements. And like, there's a lot that's been happening in Africa for the past fucking 2,000, 3,000 years. But,
yeah,
you know, they're better suited to their environment here, you know? So, or the people, human beings are better suited to Africa than they are to some of the other places.
Sure. Yeah.
Built up civilized wise earlier, you know? But, because like the big cultural stuff here didn't happen until after it had already kind of happened up in Egypt, which is Africa, but it's more like Mediterranean, really, you know, right. Like sub-Saharan Africa, I guess, is what I'm talking about.
Libya and stuff like that. But, I mean, white people are essentially these unwanted people that would, you know, couldn't hack it in the Garden of Eden, that is Africa. And we went up and we decided we would freeze to death and start being like planning things out and doing things in our little basements and like fermenting pickles and fish and like
drinking milk from other animals.
Right, which is totally bizarre. I've recently turned vegan. I'm like, I'm trying not to exploit animals anymore. It's tough. I miss cheese. Oh my God. But
there's some pretty good vegan cheese out there.
Really?
It's expensive. Yeah. And there's like, I never tried it, but I did some research into making my own vegan cheese. Like, cause you can get the cultures.
Oh really?
You know?
Interesting.
Yeah. Like you can get the cultures and just do it with different kinds of
get, like cashews. Like you could take cashews and then throw some like yeast in it or something.
Yeah, there's like, you know, because different cultures give cheese different flavors. They're different flavors. So there's ways to make like brie and blue cheese and shit out of different kinds of milks,
in.
You know?
I'm in.
Yeah. Yeah, I got heavy into the vegan cooking stuff for a while.
I mean, it's good. It's a good thing. I mean, because you get all these flavors and everything. So, but Jesus, you have to spend a lot of time in the kitchen to make it happen.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. I mean, that's why I liked it, because it's like cooking on hard mode.
Right.
You know, it's like all of a sudden, like you can't use any of the shit that you're used to using. Because I grew up working in kitchens and shit, you know? So it's like I can't use any of the stuff that I like, all the tricks and shit that I know. You know? You have to like learn new tricks and find new ingredients and shit. But like I was vegan for about, I wasn't full on vegan, but like mostly vegan for about 2 years. And I gained shit tons of weight because I was only eating like processed garbage and making these like 40,000 calorie fucking fake hamburgers and shit like that, you know? Like my body did not like it at all.
Yeah.
I did it as wrong as you can do it, you know?
Rookie mistake. I did that when the Whole Foods came out and I had all that weed money. I'd go, you know, go trimming and go down to Whole Foods and think that I was doing something good for my body. Well, I'll just drink coconut water and eat organic Cheetos and I'll be fucking saving the planet and all this stuff.
Yeah, right. I mean, that whole thing is another just like capitalist fucking mindfuck thing,
But those, I will say that some of the produce that they had tasted good and beyond like the conventional soggy Safeway bread. I would go into Whole Foods. Remember in Austin where you could go to the headquarters and go sample everything? Did you guys go do that?
No, I never did that.
So the headquarters is there and they had the big, like huge spread and stuff, and all the hobos we'd pile out of the van and go in there and you'd get a little cup and you take it around the store and you could sample anything. That was their policy. And we would get filled up, man. It was great.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely used to do a lot of sampling places. I was a bit of a samp tramp, as they say.
Bit of a samp tramp.
Yeah.
Oh, man. No, this is getting into my favorite topics, which is survival when you're out purposefully, you're a musician, you're purposefully trying not to have a job so that you can devote all your time to going place to place, playing music, having adventures. How do you survive? And that's what all the young people should know. You know, it's like, what do we do when we run out of gas? I mean, what would you do? What can you tell the first time that you were like in a position where you're like, well, what are we going to do about gas, man?
I mean, the first time I was like, I see homeless people flying signs. I'm gonna fly a sign. And it didn't fucking work. I was doing it all kinds of fucked up. I got stuck in Pittsburgh. I was having a great time but I didn't have any money, like zero money. And I didn't, nobody had shown me about dumpster diving or like any of this kind of shit. Like, I didn't know what, the, you know, I was just like, you know, fucking just couldn't figure it out. And then eventually I was with somebody and they were like, let's no, just get a gas jug and just go fucking ask people for gas. And it's like, oh my God. So I did that shit for a long time. Like, the fucking rubber tramping shit. I just like always ended up in somebody's van, you know, fucking walking around with a fucking gas jug. Yeah. I did that so much.
Is the weirdest part about it is that how well it worked versus asking somebody for money, right?
Yeah, big time. Because people don't want to give you money, but like I thought about this because I, in my life, I did that shit so much. I mean, I did that shit so much for so long. And I have never had anybody ask me for gas ever. Never. Like, so I think it's just really rare. So it throws people off guard.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, wait, oh, you just want gas? Like, okay, I give you gas. You know what I mean?
Well, the question is, are the kids today still doing it? They must, right?
I assume. I don't know what the fuck is going on. Like, I know all that shit's still out there because I see them. Yeah. But not like, very much.
Like, you'd be too afraid of getting shot because the world has gone so insane that you can't even do the things we used to do naively.
I don't think so. I think, that's our old retirement community perspective,
right?
You know,
if anything, like, there's more.
Just like, yeah, and those kids are just in the same boat that we were in fucking 15 years ago. Like, oh shit, maybe this will work. You know, I'm not going to think about the consequences.
I think you're right. There's probably more than ever because of, if anything, you know, because of shit happening. It's like people saying, you know what, fuck it.
Yeah. Well, there's definitely shit tons more people that are homeless without wanting to be in the States, you know?
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
Big fucking time. But, I mean, there's a big difference from being homeless and you don't want to be homeless to being homeless because you just want to keep moving around, you know what I mean?
Yeah. In San Francisco, that was my first place that I went to with no money, and I noticed that there was different varying degrees and spectrum of homeless people. There was like, I saw like housewives that had just been kicked out and they still were trying to carry like all the airport style luggage with them, and they're but completely, you know, disheveled and messed up and clearly homeless and stuff, but still clinging on to this, you know.
Yeah. Stuff. It's fucking crazy, man. Shit shouldn't happen, but
it really should.
You know, I think Jeff Bezos, like, he needs new disposable razors to shave his head every morning, so he's got to go ahead and gut the middle class.
Mars is for the wealthy. Earth is for the poor. No, fuck those people, man. This is why I've turned communism in my old age as well. I'm like the angry communist German onion-eating kid-yelling guy now.
Yeah.
I'm like, fuck homelessness. No, nobody gets a yacht until everybody's got a house. How about that?
Yeah, right. And then, I mean, it really is just like when you look at like people, videos and shit of people like quantifying in a way that we can see like how much a billion is, you know, like also I've seen a couple different things, but recently one guy like had like a grain of rice and was like, this is $100,000, you know, and it was like $1 billion. It was like a pallet of rice. And you're like, what the fuck?
Unfathomable, right?
Unfathomable. Yeah. Like you could take half of that and the amount that you could do, like the amount of like lives that would change, like half of that, it was astronomical. Like people shouldn't, you cannot ethically get that much money. There's no such thing as like being, getting that much money in any sort of ethical way, you know?
I always say the same thing. I say, you know, if there was one monkey that took all the bananas from the rest of the monkeys and hoarded them, science would be desperately trying to figure out what's wrong with this monkey. Like, what, he's all fucked up in the head. And, but in the case of human beings, we put him on the cover of Forbes magazine, call him a genius, have him give speeches about it.
I feel like scientists would both be like, what's wrong with this monkey? And they'd also be like, why haven't the other monkeys killed this monkey yet? You know,
totally. That's like the $1 million question right there, is why isn't there this obvious uprising against you know, I hear people sycophantically bootlicking these people saying, well, they earned it, so they should be able to keep it. It's only fair. But it's like,
you can't earn $1 billion.
There's no way, without exploiting labor.
I mean, on a massive scale, and then like buying and selling things that don't even exist, you know?
Abstractions of value, not actual value, not actual resources or something tangible, but abstractions of value that are derivatives of, you know, stocks, of assets, of
financial products.
It's just like a bunch of hocus pocus. They're shuffling money back and forth, and
pretty much, you know, and picking out, you know, what they're valuing it. It's like, I read this great book about the financial collapse in 2008. And they were talking about in Iceland, like there were like all these firms that were, they would like buy a football team for, you know, $20 million. And then they would say, this football team is worth $70 million. And then they would sell it to a firm that they were like friends with for $100 million. And then that firm would take that $100 million fucking football team and then buy some other team and then sell them both to somebody else. Like, it's just like they're creating like fake number, you know, fake prices, and then selling it within like a group where it makes all the prices for everything else rise, you know, and then
that's
they swoop in.
Fucking wild.
It's just manipulation. And like in Iceland, they made that super illegal, but they haven't done that anywhere else, you know?
Yeah. Well, they're creating this second America that only consists of an economy that's sanctioned off from the rest of us, where they have tax loopholes, where they don't have to pay taxes, but they keep all the money within a group of people that are of a certain class, and it's working.
It's working very well, and it's accelerating.
Yeah. And the police will do whatever they need to do. Like, you know about Machiavelli, right?
Mm-hmm.
He wrote the book called The Prince way back in the day, and it had all this crazy shit. And I just turned onto this recently, but that he wrote a manual on how to keep people under his thumb in his little kingdom. And it's just, and one of the things he said is like, when there's you put everybody down in a pit, right? And you make sure everybody's below you, metaphorically or whatever. And then if they start organizing and they push one of their people to the front of the, you know, push their one of the people to the edge of the pit, like Martin Luther King or one of these kind of people, and they get like one of their spokesmen up to the top, then you take him by the hand and you fling him up to the villa and you lavish him with gifts and you give him the royal lifestyle and hopefully corrupt him from any further representing this, you know, these poor bums down below.
Yeah, that's what they did. And that was like the British and French strategy for the post-colonial era in Africa.
Really?
Yeah, they would take leaders and they would either just get them completely on their team, you know, or they would kill them. Patrice Lumumba and people like that, you know. And a lot of it had to do with where they fell on the East-West Soviet Cold War split, you know. But that was a big roadblock for, you know, most African countries for a long time, is that anytime anybody would start doing well and have kind of a movement behind them, they would figure out some kind of way to just, you know, use their own power to completely neutralize the person, you know.
It's really sad that that's our you know, regular, our default setting as human beings, is that for me, it's never been like that. I was just like empathetic person, try to be, you know, a lot of our friends too, fairly, we make terrible mistakes and do petty crimes and stuff, but still it's like good people, empathetic people, but these people on top aren't like that, or the people that are in power aren't necessarily the same, you know. Do you feel like they're a different breed of human being?
I do not, actually. I think that they're just like us. They just have shittier ideas that they have developed or taken on. You know, like I had a cousin of mine. He ended up getting a job out of college for like a commodities firm. And I don't know if you know much about commodities, but basically
rice, pork bellies or whatever.
Yeah. So like commodity trading is what actually underpins the entire world. Like some of the wealthiest firms in the history of humanity have been commodity trading firms, and almost none of them have ever been publicly traded. So nobody knows what they're doing. And a lot of the richest people in the world are the heads of these firms, and nobody's ever heard their name. They're not in the newspapers, and they've been kind of running the global economy for, you know, hundreds of years. And it's just literally just like they have cheap bauxite in Jamaica and they need petrol, you know? So we're going to, you know, they're just making deals and exchanging commodities, but they do it on such a scale that they can manipulate markets in a big way. And there's some interesting books about it. There's just not a lot written about it because they are some of the wealthiest and most powerful people in the world. But nobody really knows much about them unless you go looking, you know, because they don't want to be in the public eye or anything. They're just considering themselves businessmen.
You know? Do you also think it's kind of a dry topic? Like it was so hard to get through our heads what actually happened in 2008 with these default credit swaps. Do you think the way that they manipulate the commodities are probably too confusing for like the average people to understand? Is that it?
I don't know. Maybe, but I don't think so. I think it's just boring.
Yeah.
It's literally like I read this fucking wild book called How the World is Sold, I think, or something like that. And it's just about like they highlighted some of the more interesting stuff, like people going into like there's a British commodity trader that went into Iraq or Afghanistan or something, you know, and basically they're like funding rebel groups with the sanction of the British government in exchange for like, okay, if you guys take over, we get the contract for all the petroleum. So you sell us your petroleum, we'll even install the infrastructure, and then you guys will defend it, like if you win. So it's like they're like gambling with shit like that. Like some of that stuff is pretty interesting, but a lot of it really is just like, you know, fucking in the Congo we can get these minerals and, you know, we can get them cheaply, and so we'll buy a warehouse of them and sit on them until there's some kind of glut and then sell them at elevated prices. You know, it's just like pretty, it's not like that interesting.
Yeah,
it's just not. But
they are doing
where most of the money is. Yeah, they're doing it, and most of the money and a good deal of the money being made in the world, it comes from that, and they have huge influence in governments because governments cannot function if they can't feed their people and put gas in the cars.
Yeah. Did you ever hear about the same thing as far as the manipulation of the diamond market, especially in Africa, the way they do that?
Yeah. I feel like I did read something recently about how in Russia they discovered like the world's largest cache of diamonds, like in a mountain or something. And they didn't tell anybody about it for like 15 years because the global diamond market would just fall apart if they did. So they just kept it secret, you know, shit like that. I know South Africa there's a lot of wacky shit happening with diamonds, but I don't know much about it.
Yeah, I guess I don't know the full story either, but I think it was something to the tune of it's heavily, what would you say, price fixed to a degree where it's like OPEC. They all agree on what the diamonds are going to go for, and they control all the mines, so they don't let any more. But they just recently had the first synthetic diamond made, and I think the whole thing hopefully could collapse, but yeah, I find all that shit fascinating, from the commodities to everything that, because all wealth can be traced back to natural resources that get turned into machines and proprietary information, but also just wood and gold and shit like this. And that, if you follow that and you know exactly what's going on, then you know how the world works, right?
Yeah, pretty much, you know, or you got a better grasp.
Yeah.
Than somebody that doesn't know that. But, you know, it's interesting. Like, I was reading about gold, like so many cultures use gold as a currency, like so many completely unrelated cultures prized gold and had gold and traded gold and made jewelry from gold and shit. And I was like, why the fuck is that? And I looked it up and it's like silver, gold, and copper are some of the only materials you can find in the earth where you can like melt them easily and they don't change form, you know what I mean? So like gold, like you can fucking get a bar of gold and turn it into something else and it's still the same amount of gold. Like it doesn't, the smelting it doesn't turn it into something else, and it's rare. Yeah, so there's like chemical properties to it that make it what it is, why we're obsessed with it, which is interesting to me.
Yeah, but also, you know? what the like practical use in those days, what was it? It was like, it was shiny, but also you could make...
But there's other shit that's shiny.
Right. Yeah. It's like, I didn't know why it really caught on so hard, but nowadays I guess we use it in some electronics and shit, but back in those days, yeah, to kill somebody over a shiny rock is peak hilarious.
Yeah, and I don't know. I just got me thinking, like, why the fuck did so many different disparate cultures that weren't, had no communication, use it as a currency or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and they did. Yeah. They just happened to, right?
Well, it's because of, you know, it's not just like, I thought it was like, this is like some cultural idea that has some sort of root.
Yeah.
That it's like how we, our numbers are base 60 because the Babylonians used base 60, you know, 3,000 years ago. So it's like a cultural idea that just stayed with us. And I thought maybe gold was like that, but it's not.
Yeah.
But
you'd say you would see more of gold being used as something like useful, right? Or was it just decoration and shit? Like you could.
I don't know. I mean, I know it's useful now, but I don't know if people were using it for anything.
Smelt it down and make something useful out of it. I don't know. I'm such a practical person. I kind of like, well, I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like diamonds are super useful for industrial applications and shit.
Oh, you need that to cut tiles. I did construction one summer. It fucking was horrible. You need a diamond bladed thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I use diamonds for. Like a lot of oil drilling stuff and all kinds of shit they use diamonds for. But I don't, were they using it back then? Probably not.
Yeah. It was always been shiny. That's what am I going with? I'm going with it was shiny. They thought it was neat.
Yeah, right. I guess really that's kind of it. You know, we thought it was cool. So.
I mean, stuff like they didn't have dyes and pigments to where if they saw something blue, like a flower or something, they probably thought it was pretty fucking amazing. We take that for granted these days.
That's true. Like there's, you know, colors that, you know, up until 1,000 years ago, there were colors that did not exist outside of nature. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Thanks to the plastics revolution. So have you heard about microplastics? I got to ask you.
Love them, yeah.
Can't get enough. I sprinkle them on
They're
my coffee.
All up in my body, in the water I drink, everywhere.
Yeah, I've been kind
of part of me.
Been covering it recently. I just wanted to make sure you knew about it and everything. I said, well, isn't that a feather in your hat?
Yeah, fucking that shit is fun.
Yeah.
Good stuff, man. Like finding it in fucking clouds.
Yeah. Japanese, the ocean. Japanese study founded in clouds. That's right.
Yeah.
Opened a cave, found it in a cave, found it on Everest, found it, in kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you ever get on a grainer that was full of the little plastic beads?
No, I only took a Coltrane.
Oh.
Which was
Coltrane.
Pretty nice. You come out looking pretty good. I look like Al Jolson.
Yeah, right. Yeah, man. Fucking, those things are brutal. Like, I only rode a couple Coltranes.
Tell me the best story you got on the train. And I'll tell you mine, but I don't
really have a lot of great train stories, you know. It's mostly like... We get on this thing and like I had fun talking to some people and then we got off and I just sat there for 16 hours or, you know, there's some there's some funny shit. The last fucking, the last train that I tried to ride was, I think it was like 2017 or 2016. And I was playing in a jazz band called the Swamp Donkeys. And they're like, we did a lot of like fancy international touring and shit. Like we played like the UN convention in Geneva and shit like that. And we played some shows in Los Angeles. And when I was there, I was like, I'm going to stay for a little bit. I actually want to hang out with my friend Josh from Blasting Company and some of the people. And so I stuck. I just kept the money for my flight home. You know what I mean? I was like, I'm staying here. And I ran into a old friend of mine who was also out there. And we were trying to get back to New Orleans. And she was like, I really want to ride the Sunset Line. And like, I found this like new way to do it, like in this yard where nobody goes at all. And she's like one of those hardcore train nerd people that like, she now works for the railroads. But she was like one of those people that only rode by herself, only like fucking, you know, she wanted to ride all the weird, obscure stuff. And, you know, it's like Pokemon or some shit like that.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I was like, cool, you know, I'm down. So we waited in this yard for 3 days, and I've got my, I've got a rolling suitcase full of suits, a fucking 100-year-old priceless banjo, and a bright yellow sleeping bag.
You're fresh.
And that
greenhorn yeah. over here.
I was like, this is, you know, it's like, I have to do this. Like, I was like, fuck, you know, like, well, I didn't have another option. You know what I mean? So it's like, okay, I'm doing it, you know? And, we wait in the yard for like, I think we were there for about 3 days. And interestingly enough, it's the same yard that there were a bunch of pictures of it floating around about a year ago, because some like train robbers got in there and fucking opened up all the containers. And there's like these pictures of that yard. It's not a yard, I mean, but it's like a little fucking siding thing outside of the yard, but it's just like full of cardboard where they like got into an Amazon, a couple of Amazon containers or some shit, and like opened everything up. And it was like an organized like train robbing gang, you know?
Good for them.
Yeah, good for them. I don't give a fuck. But it was just kind of interesting because she was like, this is a secret yard. Like, nobody fucking comes here. We're not going to run into anybody. We didn't run into anybody at all. So I just sat underneath her bridge and got fucking blackout drunk for 3 days, and then the train came, and we get on the train, and I'm like, finally we're going, you know. And we make it about, you know, it's doing its little thing where I'm just starting and stopping and going slow for like an hour or two, and then we start getting outside of LA, and then the train just stops, and I'm like, ah shit, you know. And then we just hear a get out of there, you know. It's like, so I get off with my fucking rolly suitcase and my hand, you know, 100-year-old banjo and the fucking fancy case and shit, you know. And she was like, the girl that I was with was like, how did you find this? He's like, I can't tell you that.
Wow.
And so then we ended up fucking buying Amtrak tickets, and we just rode that whole line on the Amtrak.
Even better. Deluxe hobo status. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it was pretty. I would have rather had done it without paying for an Amtrak. I was, I think, really drunk the whole time. And so, you know, if I had been just riding a train, it could have been bad, because this is like blackout for a whole week.
Dude, I remember a dude lost his feet. Some people get, you fall right under and just die. But I knew a guy chopped his feet off, clean off. No feet Pete. Fuck, man.
Yeah. I've heard of no feet Pete, I think. But yeah, no, that shit happens, man. It's, you know, riding trains and being blackout drunk don't mix well, but they mix more often than not, it seems.
It's like drinking, you know? And driving, it happens more often than it should. And
so yeah,
really the end result, it's like Murphy's Law. Eventually you're gonna fucking end up with no feet if you keep rolling the dice.
Yeah, right. But I was kind of excited about that particular trip because I had, that was the first train that I had gotten on in about 4 years or something. Yeah. And it was going to be my first train ride ever with a smartphone.
Right.
Because I had, yeah. I, you know, like my friend that I was with, she had never ridden a train like before smartphones. And she was like, oh, you're like an old timer. Like, it's like a different world. And I'm like, what the, you know, she's like, yeah, like I'll just, you know, I'll get on the train. I got my little power bank. I watch Trailer Park Boys for 8 hours and there's a siding and I can look and see if there's a gas station and I get off. I'm like, what the fuck? You know, like there's a vastly, vastly different experience from what it used to be. You know what I mean?
Fucking crazy, man. I'm like, I'm not jealous because all that roughness, like I showed up to New York City the first time and there was no smartphone, right? So I had like a map from the 1970s that was like this big and just, but I wouldn't trade that for anything to be completely fucked and lost and not know, you know.
Yeah.
Living in the
That moment. Was just part of the thing, man. That was part of, you know, I didn't have a phone for a long time while I was traveling. I had a girlfriend with a phone. It was fine. It's like, whatever. If people need to get in touch with me, they can figure out how to get in touch with me. Like,
yeah. I think
I can call my mom or my friends or whatever from somebody's phone if I want to.
Our parents' generation hitchhiked around the world. Like, maybe not our parents, but our parents' generation, they also hitchhiked, you know, places and did stuff and traveled the world. And you had to pick up these old telephones. Remember the old school phone? Like,
yeah.
Kids don't even know about that shit now. You got to remember the number and stuff. You're like, what's this number?
Yeah, I can't even imagine. Like you know, you fucking called your friend and like their parents answer and yeah. You had to talk to their parents and shit like that. Like kids nowadays don't have to deal with that. You know what yeah. I mean? Like it's a whole different experience. But also like you can't, your parents like know where you are and shit. Like get yeah. in touch with you. A big part of my childhood was making sure that my parents could not get in touch with me. Totally. I don't know where I was, you know. So yeah.
Stay in trouble, but don't get caught.
Yeah, right. It's a different world. But I mean, you know, it's not like it's better or worse. It's just different.
Different.
But I was excited, like I said, to ride a train where I could like look on a little map. I did actually, okay, this is not true. I did one time ride a train with a guy that had a smartphone. And he was like, check this out. And he opened the map and it was like a little dot and it was moving. And I was like, that's fucking incredible. Like, oh my God. You know?
Yeah. I don't deny the GPS thing. I'm like, I was pretty set as soon as I had it. I was like, I can do all this stuff. I could call fast food restaurants with my smartphone, look them up on the GPS and then call them on the thing and say, you forgot my cheeseburger and then go pick up a cheeseburger.
You wouldn't have to do it the old school way where you go through the drive through and fucking, right. Yeah, like the manager told me to come back because you guys put steak in my vegan taco and yeah.
Pull up and say, my name's Chris Jeffries. I called earlier. And that already sends him on this way. Like, he called earlier about what? And then I'm like, yeah, I talked to the manager. And then you had the 50-50 shot. If they said, well, who was it? I was like, I think it was a man.
Yeah, like, right. It was like Kim or something.
Jim, yeah. Kim. Yeah,
yeah, I traveled for a while with this dude, Kevin, who used to be in my old band. People called him Spicy Fingers. Flat picker.
I remember that.
Yeah, you remember Kevin, yeah. But he like fucking got off on scamming fast food places. Like he was so into that shit.
Are you serious?
He loved it, man. Like, so it was like every day he was trying to do that. He was like, oh, let's try this Taco Bell. Like, oh, let's try this fucking KFC. And like, he was big into the like going to Waffle Houses and talking to the manager and being like, hey, we're just, you know, like, stuck and can we like sweep your parking lot in exchange for some waffles and shit. And like we did that a bunch and I think I only had to sweep parking lot maybe like twice. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like sometimes they'd be like, you could have anything you want but steak. One time we played a fucking gig in a Waffle House in like the middle of nowhere, Arkansas, because we did that. And the guys were like, you boys in a band? We were like, yeah. And he's like, what kind of music you play? It's like, we play bluegrass. And he's like, well, why don't you set up right here in front of the jukebox? I'm like, okay. Fucking playing. Yeah. Like, pass the hat, made like $70 or some shit. It was cool.
That's the South, right? That's got to be the South.
Yeah, it was like, I don't know where, in Arkansas somewhere, off an interstate.
Dude, that's, see, that's where the South was always actually greater to us, whether we were gas jugging or playing an accordion or whatever at a gas station, that the people would come up with $100 bills and go, "The Lord told me to give this to you." And I just,
yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I'll sing you the most, you know, evangelical version of "I Saw the Light" that I can come up with. And give it to, because I love that. I love it. It's like, I believe in Jesus for the next, you know, 48 hours. These people are rad.
Yeah, right. It's cool. It's like people gave me a Bible. It's like, well, thank you. Like, you just gave me this thing, and I can roll cigarettes with it, and I can do all kinds of stuff with this thing. Yeah, you know? Write telephone numbers in it. Like,
yeah.
You know, that I spent probably more time in the South than anywhere else, traveling and shit. You know, and I remember the first time I really spent time in California. It was like a culture shock. Cause it's like, why are these people fucking dicks? Like, where's all the like Jesus kickdowns and like the, you know what I mean? Like, such a different vibe out there.
Yep.
I didn't like it. I ended up moving to California much later, but I fucking hated California for a long time.
You know,
like getting fights with people and shit.
I still hate it because of what it represents as this cool place that hippies used to be, but now it's turned into a big, expensive rich person's museum. And it's,
yeah, and all the old hippies are fucking mean.
Yeah and all,
they're all fucking,
everybody's mean.
Mean,
dude, everybody's mean. Where that whole fast food scam, I did that all over the country with no problem, but in California I knew that they wouldn't buy it, so I never did it, because I thought, these people are way too fucking mean to believe me. They're like, they get a home bum in their store like every 10 seconds and they're like, oh, shoo.
Yeah.
Ever try looking for a bathroom in San Francisco?
Probably. I don't know.
It's fucking horrible.
No memories of that.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. They have those like weird, I remember there's like weird like public toilet things that will, if you're in there for more than 15 minutes, they like an alarm goes off or something.
Nice.
Like anti like fucking heroin user bathrooms.
Oh,
can't
they
go sleep in there.
They do that. They put the blue light on so they can't see the vein, and so they can't
shred.
You have a bunch of furious junkies.
Yeah, fucking. I mean, San Francisco is like really grimy. You know, it's like shit looks nice, but like like the people that I would meet there, like in that fucking park. What is that fucking park?
Panhandle.
What?
The Panhandle Park. Or Golden Gate Park.
It's like, maybe it's Golden Gate Park. I don't fucking remember. I just remember like meeting like all these like turbo drunk, angry fucking people all the time out there. You know?
That had to have been it. Yeah. Well, and you get to Haight Street where all the magic happened with the, you know, all the hippies so long ago. I spent a lot of time there. I first went there and, you know, drank liquor with people in a circle all day and then slept in the bush and just totally pointless. But I don't know, man, there was some magic still around, but for the most part just a huge waste of time. Then I went to New Orleans and I said, okay, here people are actually doing things, you know.
There's a scene. That was kind of the difference. New Orleans was like people were in bands and people were having like house parties and squads and shit, and like you know, it was like just totally different.
I went from collecting cans in San Francisco and like just losing my creative and musical abilities. And I went there and then there was like, anybody was like, hey, you want to start a band? I'm like, oh, let's start. And it was super fucking cool. But did you ever spend any time in the New York or in Detroit or the Rust Belt or any of these places?
Buffalo? I spent a fair amount of time in the Rust Belt. I spent a lot of time in Pittsburgh. I spent some time in Buffalo. Like I spent a bunch of time at Birdhouse and shit out there.
That's my stomping grounds. It burned down.
I know, I heard. But I went to New York City a lot. I was probably there at least once or twice a year, but I never like spent a lot of time there because it was just too, it was like tough finding places to stay. And
It's overwhelming, yeah, it's isn't like, it?
Yeah, it just, I like New York. Like, if I was like, you know, I've had limitless supply of money or something, I would probably enjoy it more. But it's like, I don't know, it's just more difficult. Everything's expensive. People are, I don't know, there's cool shit there, but it's just.
You go play the jalopy or something over there, right?
Yeah, I played the jalopy a bunch and the Blue Note and a bunch of. I played all over New York and shit. And I've got like friends there. Yeah. You know, I like it. It's just like everybody there is just like struggling.
You could make $70 in an hour busking in Washington Square Park, but then it'd all be gone by the time you got a slice of pizza and got on the fucking train.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I remember one day like walking around and I spent like $70 and I was like, what the fuck? Like, I didn't do anything. Yeah. Like, fuck this. Like, I only had $100. Like, God damn it. You know? Yeah.
The energy wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. There was still some like good, interesting people and stuff. But I think George Carlin's right. He says California is like a small woman saying "fuck me," while New York is a large man saying "fuck you."
Yeah, I mean, you know, California is—it's like that whole like people call it gentrification, but I feel like it's like more involved than just a term like a blanket term like that. But it's like they're like. It's like they're turning into museums or whatever, you know, where like people like, cause you know, New York used to be like the cheap city to move to like in the fucking 60s and 70s and shit. You know? And now it's like only for rich people. Like, and, you know, same with San Francisco, LA is turning into that. Like Nashville's turning into that fucking, it's just happening all over, you know.
Well, this is back to the thing we talked about before, the commodification of housing, you know, is a, mm-hmm. is a, I think I'm over here from across the pond trying to do the research, but it appears to me that the rise in rise in rent and the unaffordability of houses is totally from rich people not knowing where else to stick their money these days and using it as a vessel to you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, investments. And so more people buy these things, it makes the prices go up, and then they get fucking groups together and buy big things of property. I mean, it really should be illegal for fucking a company to own a residential property, you know, unless it's like, I mean, I'm sure there's exceptions to that, but that seems to be really the issue is that, yeah. You know, it's like companies are buying these fucking properties, you know, like, yeah. So in the plan to eventually just create permanent renters of everybody,
you'll own nothing and like it.
Yeah, that's what's happening. Yeah, you know? It's like the prices keep going up, so it's a good investment. Yeah. And I mean, now that the interest rates have risen, it apparently has slowed down, but I don't think by that much. I mean,
yeah,
it's slowed down, but that's still the trend.
There will have to be a revolution or whatever, or otherwise more people are just going to hope or die from poverty or whatever, because this is not a sustainable thing. But, you know, the old people, everybody over 50 right now is going through the biggest like wealth increase in history, and everybody below 50 is going through the biggest like poverty that they've ever been through. And in like 10 to 20 years, there will be the greatest wealth transfer in American history. So... but it's all speculated, right? It's all speculative based on demand. And I don't trust anything with America says our companies are worth this much or our money's worth this much. I think it's all bullshit. It's like Donald Trump's getting in trouble right now for that very thing. Buying real estate, like you explained, like this other guy, buying real estate and then exaggerating the fucking worth of the real estate and then like flipping it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Exaggerating the value of things. So, sorry. I just get a little excited.
Nah, that's what's happening, man. That's fucking shit up, man. And it's happening everywhere.
Look, we did double time, so look, we'll cut it off now. We come back and do this again, please, okay?
Yeah, I'm down.
I enjoy talking with you. It's good to see an old familiar face from the same kind of life we live.
Milieu.
Right. Milieu.
So
I want to thank Joseph Faison, the fourth. Musician, songwriter, hell of a human being. He'll be back next time. Anything you want to add before we go, bud?
No.
Don't let your meat loaf. All right, we'll talk every day. Just hang on. See you guys next time. Bye.